Okay, so imagine this. Your startup's really hitting its stride. You've nailed product market fit, and now you're looking at going global. It's exciting.
Absolutely. Huge opportunities out there.
But it's also, well, pretty daunting. The world's full of complexities, different cultures, rules.
It's a lot. And that's exactly what we're diving into today. We're kind of giving you a shortcut, drawing insights from Chapter 12 of Emmanuel Bakar's Startup Process Improvement, Volume 1, Turning Chaos into Cash.
Right.
The goal here is to hand you a practical roadmap for that international expansion.
Right.
We're really focusing on how you scale your operations, your processes, across different countries and cultures effectively.
So the million-dollar question, really, is how do you take what works at home and make it work globally without losing that efficiency, that quality that made you successful in the first place?
Exactly.
This deep dive, then, is about tackling those unique challenges, those opportunities, and figuring out how to balance keeping things consistent while also, you know, adapting where you need to.
Precisely. Let's get into it. The first big thing, the core tension, really, is what we call the global standardization spectrum.
Okay.
On one side, you want standardization. Keep processes the same everywhere for quality, control, efficiency. Make sense? But on the other side, you need localization. You have to adapt things to fit local conditions, local culture, local rules.
So it's not like you just pick one. You can't just say, we're standardizing everything or we'll just wing it locally.
No, absolutely not. And that's a common mistake, trying to force one extreme. It's really a spectrum.
A spectrum.
Yeah, different processes will land on different points. Some need to be super standard. Others need a lot of local flavor. Bakari puts it really well. He says the key is finding the right balance for each process, not just applying one rule everywhere.
Right, so it's process by process. Okay, that makes sense. So let's talk specifics then. Which processes really need to lean heavily towards standardization? What are the things you just can't compromise on globally?
Well, think about the absolute foundations. Financial processes are a huge one.
Okay, yeah, money.
Exactly. Your accounting standards, financial reporting, how you handle budgets, cash flow, investment approvals, these need to be rock solid and consistent. It's about creating that universal language of trust and control, really. You need that transparency across the board.
Non-negotiable for Overstreet. Got it. What else?
Your brand and your core marketing stuff.
Your identity.
Right. Your brand guidelines, your core message, the visual look, product naming. You want people recognize you instantly, trust you instantly wherever they are, and also how you measure marketing success. You need a standard way to track performance globally so you can actually compare apples to apples across different markets.
Okay, finances, brand. What about the product itself? How you actually build the thing?
That too. How you conceive, design, build, iterate on your product or service, ideally, that process should be highly standardized.
Keeps the quality consistent.
Precisely. It maintains the integrity of what you offer, ensures efficiency, and gives a unified experience. And all of this really points towards needing what Bakari calls a robust global process architecture.
A global process architecture sounds impressive. What is that exactly?
It's more than just, you know, setting up an office somewhere new. It's a structured way to design, document, and govern your processes globally.
So it's the plan before you expand.
Exactly. Its purpose is to make sure you keep things standard where it matters, but also allow for that necessary local adaptation without everything falling apart into chaos.
And what happens if you don't have that architecture? If you just kind of expand ad hoc?
Oh, you risk fragmentation, duplicated effort, inconsistent quality, loss of control. It's like trying to build a global skyscraper without any blueprints.
Right. Just adding floors randomly.
Yeah, it becomes a mess. This architecture holds it all together, provides clarity, ensures efficiency as you scale.
Okay, that makes sense. But then there's the human element, right? Culture. That feels like where things get really tricky. It's not just language.
Oh, not at all. Culture runs deep. It profoundly impacts how processes are understood, how they're put into practice, even how people feel about them.
How so? Like, beyond just translating documents?
Yeah, it's about ingrained ways of working, how people interact, how they solve problems, their approach to deadlines, hierarchy. It's fundamental.
So what are some of the common communication tripwires then when you're operating globally?
Well, the practical stuff first. Time zones. They're a killer.
Yeah. Scheduling nightmares.
Totally. Limited overlap for real-time work, delayed responses. It slows everything down. Plus, there's the risk of burnout if people are always expected to be online at crazy hours.
And language. Even if, say, everyone uses English.
Even then. Proficiency levels vary, nuances get lost, misinterpretations happen. You might use the same word, but it means slightly different things in context. Terminology might be inconsistent. Translation quality itself can be an issue.
Okay, do you have an example like where this played out?
Yeah. Bakri highlights a tech company. They expanded from Lagos in Nigeria to Nairobi, Kenya, and Johannesburg, South Africa.
Okay, all primarily English-speaking business environments.
Right. But their communication styles were vastly different.
Right.
The Lagos team. Very direct, expressive, used humor analogies.
Okay.
The Nairobi team, more reserved, contextual, lots of implied meaning.
Yeah.
And the Johannesburg team, kind of a mix, but very structured in writing.
Wow. So how did that cause problems?
It led to misunderstandings, especially around developing product features. Decisions got delayed. Processes weren't implemented consistently because people were interpreting requirements differently based on these styles.
Yikes. So what did they do? How did they fix it?
They got smart. They created a communication styles guide.
Like a manual for talking to each other.
Sort of. It documented these differences and gave practical tips for how the team should interact. And they set up translation protocols for important internal messages, basically. Having people from different regions check things for clarity across cultures before sending them out.
That's clever. Did it work?
Dramatically. Misunderstandings dropped by over 60%, apparently.
Yeah.
And it really sped up getting processes rolled out consistently.
Wow, that's a great example of actively building bridges. It's easy to just blame language, but these cultural nuances are huge. Okay, so besides culture and communication, what other big risks do you need to manage when going global? Compliance feels like a big one.
Huge. Absolutely huge. Ignoring regulations in new markets, they can lead to massive fines, damage your reputation, even shut down operations. Remember compliance processes from our earlier dive.
Mm-hmm. Core category.
Exactly. They're vital safeguards for a reason, especially globally.
So beyond the cultural side, what are the key sort of legal and regulatory risks we're talking about?
Well, there's global contract management, making sure your agreements hold up everywhere. Protecting your intellectual property is critical for startups.
Yeah, definitely.
How you handle disputes, managing different legal entities in each country. It's complex. You absolutely need good local legal advice in every single market you enter.
No cutting corners there.
No way. And then there's cybersecurity.
Oh, yeah. Especially with the data privacy laws being so different everywhere. GDPR, CCPA, others.
Exactly. You need a global privacy framework, but one that can adapt to local rules. Strong data classification, secure ways to move data across borders, and a really solid plan for what happens if there's a breach.
The cost of getting that wrong must be enormous.
Astronomical. Not just fines, but losing customer trust, especially if you mishandle their data because you didn't understand local laws. That could be catastrophic.
Okay. Risk management is key. Shifting gears slightly, what about the actual operations, like supply chains? Scaling that globally sounds like a monster challenge.
It is. It falls under that logistical and supply chain risk category in your process architecture.
Yeah.
You need to think about diversifying your supply chain. Don't rely on one source or region.
Mm-hmm.
Develop local suppliers where possible. Optimize your shipping and logistics. That's different everywhere. Manage inventory across borders effectively. And crucially, maintain quality control when production or service delivery is spread out. It's intricate.
Is there a case study that shows how getting the process right helps here?
Yes, definitely. Think about global freight logistics. Mid-sized company expanding into North America and Europe, and they were really struggling.
How bad was it?
Pretty bad. Operations were fragmented. Their on-time delivery rate was only 77%. It took them an average of 27 days to get an order to a customer.
27 days. Ouch. Customers must have been leaving.
They were. Satisfaction was down at 68%. They were losing business fast. Classic case of expansion outpacing process capability.
So what turned it around? Did they just buy new software?
No, and that's the key. They took a radical process-first approach. They built an integrated process architecture for their whole global supply chain.
Okay.
They blended methodologies like Lean to cut waste, Six Sigma for quality.
Hmm.
They standardized the core stuff like order fulfillment and shipping protocols, but built in flexibility for regional differences like customs rules.
Mm-hmm.
Then they brought in technology, but selectively, to support those now optimized processes.
So process first, technology second. What happened?
Oh. The results were stunning. On-time delivery jumped to 98%.
Wow.
Order to delivery time. Slashed at just 7 days.
From 27. Incredible.
Yeah. And customer satisfaction soared to 92%.
Yeah.
It just shows the power of getting those underlying processes right before you throw tech at the problem, especially globally.
That's a powerful story. And it brings up customer support, too. We touched on TechConnect solutions before. Even if your supply chain works, if support is bad, you still lose customers, right? Especially globally.
Absolutely. Tech Connect, remember they had teams in Lagos and Austin. They were facing a horrible 47% customer churn.
47%.
Yeah. Average response time was 22 minutes. Customer satisfaction was only 62%. They were bleeding customers even as they grew.
So what was the process fix there?
They used lean process mapping. Mm-hmm. They looked at their support workflows step by step, and they found that something like 64% of the activities their support team did added zero value for the customer trying to get help.
64%, just internal churn.
Yeah, lots of handoffs, rework, waiting, stuff that didn't solve the customer's problem faster.
Yeah.
So they fixed those fundamental processes, standardized how they troubleshoot, gave frontline agents more power, streamlined escalation.
There were an impact.
Huge. Churn dropped by 68%. Huh? Customer satisfaction jumped to 4.7 out of 5. It proves that fixing those core support processes is absolutely critical for a good global customer experience, no matter where your teams sit.
So bringing it all together,
yeah,
building and managing these global teams, it's clear that processes aren't just about efficiency. They're deeply connected to how people perform, how they collaborate.
Totally. The human element is central. We talk communication and culture, but you also have the practicalities of talent management. How do you find, onboard, grow, and keep great people in different parts of the world?
Mm-hmm.
And making sure someone owns each key process across those different regions, accountability is crucial.
It really sounds like the goal isn't to replace people with processes or tech. It's more about using processes and tech to, well, augment them, free them up.
Exactly that. It's about empowering your teams, wherever they are, to do their best work, to focus on higher value stuff like innovation, problem solving, really connecting with customers, not just getting bogged down in inefficient workflows.
Okay, so let's wrap this deep dive up. We've covered a lot of ground. That crucial balancing act between standardizing and localizing.
The spectrum.
The need for that global process architecture as a foundation, navigating tricky cultural and communication waters.
Yeah, and proactively managing risk, legal, cyber, supply chain.
And seeing through examples like Global Freight and Tech Connect, just how powerful that process first thinking is for scaling supply chains and customer support globally.
It's definitely complex, yeah, but getting that foundation right is what enables sustainable success, not just chaotic growth.
So for you listening, here's your actionable takeaway. If global expansion is on your radar, even distantly, pick just one core process in your startup right now, one that you know would need significant changes for an international market. And this week, just start mapping it out. What would need to change? What are the potential adaptations? Just take that first step.
Yeah, just start thinking it through. And that leads us to a final thought, something to maybe chew on.
Okay.
In this world that's getting more connected, but also more diverse every day, how can you flip the script? How can embracing the complexities of going global, instead of just putting up with them, actually become your startup's biggest competitive advantage? How does navigating that complexity will set you apart?